D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingen, Willie Donick, Connor Newt here with you. Derek Mason, a well-deserved day off. We are live at 5 Iron Golf, 202 21st Avenue South in Midtown. It's buzzing in here. If you need something to do tonight, I suggest 5 Iron Golf. We also do have some giveaways coming up, including a 2 free hours of golf in a Trackman golf simulator that is a $180 value. We've also got a $75 gift card, a $50 gift card. So if you're here or if you're not, you should be, come and find us. You can enter the raffle to win these excellent prizes. We also do have some Vanderbilt baseball tickets to give away. Find our table near the front entrance of 5 Iron Golf, and you can register to win some Vandy Boys tickets. So let's get back to our discussion on the Nashville Predators. They lose 4-1 last night against the Utah Mammoth. The Mammoth clinch a playoff spot. The Predators now 1 point back of the LA Kings for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. The Kings have one game in hand. The Predators are back in action tomorrow. 3 consecutive home games to wrap up the regular season. Minnesota is in town tomorrow, a 4 p.m. Central puck drop. As always, you can hear that game right here on 102.5 The Game. But we're talking specifically about UC Saros. UC Saros was the goaltender of record last night for the Predators. He allowed 4 goals in the game, this coming off the heels of Justus Onanen recording the Predators' first shutout of the season and an incredible performance analytically. And when we talked about this yesterday, Willie, I said, hey, if I were in Andrew Burnett's shoes, I may have gone with the hot hand in Justus Onanen. You and Derek made the point that if you do that, maybe players in the dressing room raise their eyebrow a bit. I think we've seen it from both sides. I think there are people who agree with you and Derek, people who agree with me. I do want to get Connor's opinion on this as well. It just because this UC Saros conversation isn't going away. That's why earlier this week when we talked about this, I said that UC Saros has what I would call a perception problem. There is a perception that he is not a big game goaltender. You can certainly poke holes in that argument, but that perception exists. And when people see Saros lose a game that the Predators need to win, especially after the backup goaltender had an outstanding performance, it only fuels that narrative, Willie. But let me get Connor's thoughts on this quickly before we get back to you, Willie, and the texters as well. 615-737-1025.
I think a lot of it has to do with recency bias. And what I mean by that is you saw the groundbreaking historic start that Justus Onanen had the other day against the Kings. And I'm not trying to take anything away from him because that was an incredible game, incredible level of play on both sides of the puck, and Justus Onanen did his job and got a shutout. But I think you're taking too much away from that. I think you're going off of a one-game instance and saying, that's the guy. And to your point, Adam, I do think UC Saros has a perception problem. Let me use an analogy, and I'm getting very excited about this analogy based on what season it is. It's baseball season. I'm
indeed
really excited about that. So let me use an analogy. If there's a baseball team, and we're in the March to October, and the ace doesn't have as good a game as the next guy in the rotation, the rotational guy has a 9-inning, maybe 2 hits, doesn't allow a run. Are we going to go and say, yeah, that guy needs to be the ace from now on as we get down the stretch in pivotal series that lead us to getting into a wild card spot in, let's just say, the National League? No, I don't think that's going to happen. Like, let's use the Boston Red Sox, for example. Are they going to go away from Garrett Crochet if they get into that situation where if they win out enough and they win enough series, they're going to be in that AL wildcard spot, and they're going to go away from Garrett Crochet because he had a bad game and hand it over to Sonny Gray? No, I don't think that's realistic. So I think that's kind of a similar problem that you have here in the Predators, in that, yes, I know it takes a little bit more time for a pitcher to rest that arm and get back into a place where they can start a full game, but hockey's kind of similar in that aspect. It's also similar in that A pitcher needs a good defense behind him. And I'm not saying the Preds' defense has been really bad this season. It's had moments. But it's hard to have a good defense when two of your top defensemen are not playing, especially one of them being one of the best players to ever come through this franchise and your 1A player on the ice at all times in Roman Yossi. So I just think there's kind of some recency bias and people that are too quick to jump to conclusions. Maybe they should have rid the hot hand. I'm kind of with Willie and Derek on that, and what does that send a message to in your locker room that you're giving up on the guy that has kind of been your guy for years and years and years? And look, I think you're right, Adam, in that UC Soros has that perception problem, and there's always going to be something to complain about from someone with him. That's what I think the ultimate takeaway on this is. But let me just say, if this, let's go back 8 years from right now, if this was Pecorine in that situation and UC Soros is riding the hot hand, would we be having this conversation? Would people be saying, let's pull Pecorine and put UC Soros in there just because he's playing a lot hotter right now than the starter?
And it did reach a point historically where they did, as Rene aged some and Soros started coming on, they did hit that crossover point.
Yeah.
And that could happen in the coming years if Justus Onanen continues to play like he did the other night. I mean, yes, they can't ignore that.
But it's not there right now.
But right now, it's undisputed who the man is and who the team believes in. They believe in UC Soros. That he is a main guy in the locker room. So that is a big reason they went with him last night.
I want all of you listening to think critically. And I know a lot of you are going to take that as us making excuses. But as I've said before, my goal on this show is to make y'all smarter sports fans. So let's think critically about this. UC Soros, at his peak, was one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. And I would put his peak between 2021, the 56-game shortened season, through 2023. In those three seasons, he finished in the top six in Vezina voting all 3 years, including a finalist spot in 2021-2022. In those 3 years, which included one of the most jaw-dropping extended displays of goaltending I've ever seen, the second half of that 56-game season. Remember where the Predators were halfway through that season. I was asking John Hines if he was concerned about getting fired halfway through that 56-game season because they were that bad. UC Soros single-handedly dragged that Predators team into the playoffs, and he actually finished 11th in MVP voting that season because of that performance. So between
and Pecorine was still on the team. That illustrates your point,
yep,
Connor. That's when the passing of the torch really happened. That was Pecorine's last season.
Between 2021 and 2023, UC Soros had a save percentage of .920. And I know save percentage is not the be-all, end-all, and save percentage around the league is declining over time,
which is a huge part of the equation.
But .920 over a three-season sample is incredible. Here's the issue. In the past three seasons, 2024, 2025, and so far in 2026, his save percentage over those three seasons is .899. .899, Willie, I would say, at this moment is an average save percentage league-wide.
Right, because the average save percentage is going down each year, partially because they're calculating what is a shot on goal, much more stringent, you know, more technology involved, like exact, was that shot going in?
Like
whereas
baseball.
Before, it would be like, who's on stats tonight? Connor, you got stats? Oh, yeah, I got it. Yeah,
subjective.
I'll do it. Hey, was that on goal? Yeah, I think it was on goal. I think that would have gone in. And that was it. That was a shot. And you even had teams manipulating it. Like Scotty Bowman would say, if it's anything close for our team, you put it up there as a shot. And if it's close for the other team, don't put it up as a shot. Like, I think that was going on. And the official stat guy was the official stat guy. Now they're much more sound on what they're doing. And also shooters are becoming smarter and more selective at when they shoot. They're not just saying any shot's a great shot, so just put it on net. They're waiting and waiting and waiting for the better shot. So that's affecting the league-wide save percentage, which is now, what, 896, I think, something like that at last check. It's either 897, 896. It could change by a thousandth of a percentile.
So working against Soros in this debate is the fact that he has declined since his peak.
Yes, he is, and I grant you that. Yes. For me, the defender of Soros, yes, as I know you, everybody knows that I am, he is not at the same level that he was during that three-year stretch.
Yes, he has declined.
He's been good, but he's not the same. He's not elevating the entire team like he was.
Right. We had a texter recently point out the fact that it's always hard to be the guy who follows the guy. And Pecorine has a statue outside of Bridgestone Arena, for heaven's sake. So that plays into it as well. A lot of you will point out the fact that UC Soros and the Predators have not won a playoff series when Soros is the starting goaltender. What I would say in how I would counter, how I would argue that against that would be, think of the playoff series the Predators played where UC Soros was the starting goaltender. Of those series, there's only one where I would say, yeah, he probably should have been better, and that was the qualifying round series against the Arizona Coyotes, who are now the Utah Mammoth, the Arizona Coyotes in the 2020 COVID bubble playoffs. And that was a three-game series. But the series against Carolina, they were big underdogs in that series. The series against Vancouver, the team could not score. That was a huge problem in that series. I believe Soros may have allowed, what, Willie, 12 or 13 total goals over six games?
I think the goals were like 12-10 or 14-12, something like that.
No one could score in that series, especially the Predators. So it's hard to steal games and win games when your teammates aren't giving you run support. So I understand why Predators fans, some Predators fans, I don't want to speak for all of them, I understand why some Predators fans have soured on UC Soros. But again, I want you to think critically here. One texter says, so statistically and analytically, who is the better goalie since the Olympic break? Let me pull that up.
It's Onanen. I mean, yes, there's no question Onanen that his numbers are better.
Onanen has the better numbers since the Olympic break. If you look at UC Soros' record over the past 10 games, he's 6-2-2. Yes, his goals against average and save percentage aren't sparkling, but in his starts, the Predators have points in 8 out of 10. Isn't that what you want at this time of the year? The goalie is giving them an opportunity to win. And
Onanen's numbers are better, but his one loss is 3-3. And I think he's 4-4 since the Olympic break. You say, I don't know where you're going but
Soros is 7-4-3 since the Olympics. Onanen is 4-4.
Right, but Onanen has better
save
numbers. Percentage,
yes.
Better goals against.
Yes. So
I can see why this debate is coming up.
Yes.
There's no doubt. It's a great debate. But I think sometimes people are oversimplifying and saying, he gave up four, they lost, they should have started the other guy. It's much more nuanced than that.
It's revisionist history, I think. You're looking at specific situations and specific games and thinking, well, if we would have done this and we would have started him, then we would have had a better outcome. And I don't think you can do that in this world of sports, especially in, kind of like you mentioned, Willie, a modern NHL that's technologically advanced and a lot more things are measured more specifically and technologically. I don't think you're capable of allowing yourself to do that revisionist history thing.
I do think that it would be of tremendous help to UC Soros if he pushes the Predators into the playoffs over these final three games. They've got three games at home. I would assume he starts at least two of them. If he can help the Predators get into the playoffs, I do think that would quiet some of the noise. But then again, if the Predators make the playoffs and they'll play the Colorado Avalanche, and if the Colorado Avalanche have their way with the Predators, then this conversation comes back up. Despite the fact that if the Predators make the playoffs and draw the Avalanche, in terms of the gap in points between the two teams, it's going to be one of the biggest mismatches in the wild card era. If you're just looking at the number of points the Avalanche will have and the number of points the Predators will have, if you're just basing it off of the gap in points, it's going to be one of the biggest differences in points over the past 10, 11, 12 years.
Yeah, they'll be the biggest underdog in the playoffs, for sure.
For sure.
I think the best part of this story, really, is that Jussi Saarinen has gotten into this conversation. Because a year ago, when they traded Scott Wedgewood for Saarinen, and Saarinen, just like the entire team, struggled, I think, and even that bled into this year, which is also a reflection of the team, that when they were 6-12-4, Saarinen couldn't stop anything. I think there were those that are going, that was a bad trade. Barry Trotz, what was he thinking? But I think Saarinen has now turned into a very viable weapon who hopefully is only going to get better. He's only 26 years old. So this is the good part of the story, is now you have a guy that maybe as the coming years happen can take some workload off of UC Soros, which is something they've been wanting to do but haven't felt like they could do until now, probably. And hopefully that will mean better things for the entire team's goaltending. They also have to continue to be better defensively as a team, which is still not a strength.
And we'll get to your reaction next, 615-737-1025. But also, between the two goaltenders, they have been really, really good together since the Olympic break. The two of them are largely responsible for the fact that the Predators are in this position to begin with. Saarinen and Soros together. So keep that in mind as well. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction. Plus, Connor has a Titans question for all of us, which we will get to as well. 615-737-1025. We are out at 5 Iron Golf in Midtown, 202 21st Avenue South. Come join us. It's a beautiful late afternoon here in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got some giveaways as well, including 2 free hours of golf and a Trackman golf simulator. That's a $180 value. It can be yours for absolutely nothing if you come on out and enter our raffle here at 5 Iron Golf. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Connor Newt, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Look, it's Mark Borowiecki.
Just popping by. He was on the same flight I was. He's moving fast.
Boro.
Boro alert.
One of my favorites. Great guy. Great guy, Mark Borowiecki.
He was on the epic road trip with the Preds in the player development department now. Great to have along.
Yes. Wonderful human being. Let's get back to the Predators quickly before we transition. We've been talking about UC Soros. I just want to get to some of your reaction. 615-737-1025. This is not about the Predators, but Joey says, what are the odds that Derek runs air during his hike? Do you guys think he'd run or fight it?
Derek would elude the bear.
Yes.
I think he'd hug it. I think he'd embrace it. He's a lover, not a fighter.
Chuck.
Let's have a conversation. Just make friends.
Yeah. Chuck says, I'm not anti-Soros. When he took Rene's spot, he slowly took away games because he was playing better. That's going with the hot hand. In all other major sports, we feed the hot hands. In hockey, if a forward is playing good, he stays in the lineup. If a defenseman is playing good, he stays in the lineup. We should have went with Big Juice last night. One texter says, at Pekka Rinne's retirement ceremony, he said he was leaving us in good hands, and Pekka would never lie to us. One texter says, last night wasn't Soros' fault. However, in the upcoming draft, if someone offers a first-round pick and a top forward prospect for Soros, I would let him go in a heartbeat. Well, Chris is the texter. Chris, UC Soros has a no-movement clause in his contract. So even if the Predators wanted to do that, it's all up to him. So they could get that offer, but Soros could say, nah, I'm good, and he can stay.
I also think it's important to point out how many teams would love to have UC Soros. I think if they did want to shop him around, there's no question I think they could get a pretty good return for him, because there are a lot of teams that feel like the only piece that's missing is an excellent goaltender. And despite Soros being down a level from his best, as we've pointed to the numbers, you know, there's still, look at the Oilers. Do you think the Oilers feel good about their goaltending going into the playoffs? I don't think so.
Not
no.
At all. Yeah.
I don't think, I think Utah is, as much as they're riding Karel Vemelka and the fans are behind him and everybody's wearing these veggie heads, he's never played in a playoff series. We'll find out. if he's doing it. His numbers aren't that great, and there are a lot of other teams. Vegas would be a good example. You know, the Sharks are probably going to miss the playoffs because they don't have the goaltending. Mm-hmm. That's one thing they're missing. And ironically, that's, again, perspective. If you've been on this pathway of they need to move on from Saros, they shouldn't have signed him, the alternative would have been to keep him, trade him, or trade Saros and keep Yaroslav Askarov, who has really struggled 2 years later. He's still not anywhere close to being a winning goalie, albeit on a team that doesn't defend very well at all. That's still a weakness for the Sharks. So it's still relative. Saros is still one of the better goalies in the league. He's just not one of the top five or six like he was when he was at his peak. And I still believe he can get back to that if the right environment is put around him.
We'll see what happens with the Predators tomorrow.
Read the one, though, from Nevada.
Okay.
Where's the Nevada guy? This is the one that gave me a chuckle during the thing. Where's Nevada? Josh from Nevada.
Nevada Josh.
Yeah.
He's our man.
And,
he can do it.
Josh, and I'm going to make fun of Josh a little bit. I appreciate Josh listening. He texts us a lot.
Yes,
all right?
He does. Josh is one of our devoted listeners.
Yeah.
Josh says, starter loses, backup wins. Like last 10 games, it's been this way. I mean, we're not blind. When it comes down to it, nobody cares about each goal and how it was made and what could have or should have happened. It's win or lose. That's all that matters to fans. And people see when he's in, they lose. When the backup is in, they win.
Okay.
I say, let's put big juice on and in, and in when they play better teams and see how he does because he wins against crappier teams. When Saros plays, it's against better teams. So that's not fair either.
So the whole thing about it's all about winning. Saros is 6-2-2 in his last 10 starts. Onanen is 4-4. So if it's only about winning, Saros has been winning more. So that's what I just don't get about that. Like, I'm asking, when Josh texts there, did he watch the game? Has he been watching the game?
Let us know, Josh.
I mean, they've been winning when Saros has been putting in there. His numbers, they've been winning 5-4 at times. And Onanen has lost some games 4-3 or 3-2. Mm-hmm. Saros has had the same. Saros lost a shootout 3-2 on this road trip, but he played a very good game in L.A. despite the loss. So there's just a lot. It's just not that simple when we get down to this stuff.
I think goalie is one of those positions in sports that you don't just ride the hot hand with. You have to have an established guy that to make your franchise move forward. Like goalie, quarterback, I think in baseball you have to have maybe not the guy at pitcher, but you need to have someone that sets themselves above the rest of the committee. Goalie is that position to me because you need someone that has more, yes, the fundamentals of goaltending, but also the skill that sets them apart from the backup. It's why you have a starter and a backup. So I'm not on board with the whole, well, they can just make the sub and everything will be better. No, it's, I don't know, put it out perfectly with the records. I think just because a guy wins more or looks better in games doesn't mean it's going to be a better product when you put him on the ice.
The fact that Onanen has played well enough to give them pause speaks a lot about what they think of Onanen. That's a good thing. But I would also say that you made a good analogy about the pitchers. Do you go with your ace in a one-game must-win, even if the ace isn't red hot and there's another guy on your team that's pitching better? Most of the time, those teams are going to go with the ace in the big game. It is a different job, right? The starting goalie as opposed to the backup. But and you've seen it, Adam. There are times where you ride the backup. It's easier to do it in the middle of the season while a guy works out. At the end of the season, it's really, really tough to make a switch because it's a different role. It would be like the Packers because Malik Willis had some really good numbers. I mean, numbers that just earned him a big contract as a starter. That would be like the Packers saying, well, boy, Malik Willis has played great. Mm-hmm. Let's start him in front of Jordan Love. You wouldn't do that, right? So, or you would be really controversial if you did do it.
Yeah.
Which the Bills did. Remember, they years ago for the Music City Miracle, they benched Doug Flutie famously. They put in Rob Johnson. That was one of the more controversial stories going back then. So I'm just saying it's not as simple as, well, guy had a shutout, put him back in there. It's definitely worth discussing, and they did give it a lot of thought, I'm pretty sure.
We'll see how the Predators do tomorrow, 4 p.m. Central puck drop against the Minnesota Wild. Three regular season home games remaining for the Predators as they try to qualify for the playoffs. Let's quickly transition to the NFL draft. And Connor, you asked me this question earlier today, so I want to start with you. The NFL draft is still a couple of weeks away. Oh, my God. Can it just get here already?
Please. Let's just have it this weekend. Can we do that?
Yes. Can we move up the NFL draft to tomorrow? That would be great.
David, get Goodell on the line.
Yes, we'll please. Get Roger Goodell on the phone pronto. But, Connor, you asked me to ask all of our listeners as well at 615-737-1025. You asked me what would be the worst possible outcome for the Titans in the first round. You've read all the mocks. I've read them too. Frankly, I'm tired of reading them, but we need material. What would be your worst possible outcome, Connor Newt, for the Titans in the first round? Answer your own question.
Well, let me start with this. Did you notice I said first round and not pick number four?
You did say first round.
I did. So, I don't think that trading down is going to be an option for the Titans, because if you look at the top 10 of this draft, it's just not, from a talent level compared to other drafts, it's not up to par with those. So I'm not sure. I've heard Big Joe talk about this before, and that he's worried that someone's going to trade up to number three and take Jeremiah Love, and I don't think that's realistic to think about. But I think the worst possible outcome for the Titans in the first round is to trade down. And yes, you'll supplement that with some picks, but to trade down and to grab a position that isn't as much of need. Like, the conversation has been Sonny Styles this week. Sonny Styles is going to be a good NFL player. I promise you that. He's got all the intangibles. He profiles well. He profiles a lot like Fred Warner, actually. But it's not a position of dire need as much as edge rusher, or a wide receiver, or a running back, or I would even put cornerback ahead of that position. I'm not saying that Sonny Styles would be the worst-case scenario for the Titans to draft, because I think he would be a really good player. But I'm saying if they trade down and they select a player that they don't necessarily have a position of need for, I think that would be a bad first round. Maybe not disastrous, but I think it would be a bad case scenario.
It's a good question, and there are a lot of variables. The Titans could trade down, for instance, and get more draft picks, make more picks. But to me, and this is where I've been on the draft for some time, as I've been doing my research on the NFL draft, and I am not a ball knower the way that Teron Davenport is, or Paul Kaharsky, or Mike Herndon, or Easton Freeze, all of whom have been on our program. But in doing my research, here's what I've gathered. That this draft, the top prospects are all considered outliers in one way or another. Jeremiah Love is considered by many to be the top overall prospect in this draft. And yet he plays running back. And we've gone through the history of teams drafting running backs at the top five or the top 10. It doesn't happen anywhere near as often as it used to. And in recent history, the results have been mixed. Sonny Styles, as you mentioned, is a physical freak, but he's an off-ball linebacker, and off-ball linebackers don't typically get drafted in the top five. You know, Carnell Tate is the top wide receiver, but no one necessarily thinks he's on the level of other number one receivers in recent draft classes.
His 40 will kill him, too.
Caleb Downs is a safety. Safeties don't typically get drafted in the top five. So there are a lot of outliers. But to me, the outlier, and people who have been listening to this show know, the one outlier I cannot wrap my head around, the one outlier I cannot look past is Reuben Bain. To me, I think it's too much of a risk to take Reuben Bain at number four overall. I would not be shocked, based on some of the reading I've done, if Reuben Bain falls out of the top 10. So
you think the arms are a concern?
The one thing that I've mentioned, I believe it was Todd McShay, said that no pass rusher with sub 31-inch arms has recorded double-digit sacks in the NFL in 20 years. Now, here's one thing he didn't – we talk about context, Willie. Here's one thing that McShay did not mention. How many sub 31 pass rushers have there been? in the past 20 years? Is it 15? Is it 25? Is it 4? You know,
right.
Like, so
that's a really good point. That's a good question that
right.
A lot of people don't even think. I hadn't thought about that.
Right. So,
but when you read that,
yes.
You say, oh man, why would you ever draft
right.
this guy?
So I've been hung up on that. So, like, as weird as it sounds, because a lot of people have a lot of good things to say about Reuben Bain, I would not love that pick.
Right. And as we've discussed, we're talking about, you know, it's the sub 31 inch.
Yes.
Right? And what do his arms measure in
30 at? And 7/8 inches.
So we're talking about
an eighth of an inch.
I mean, that's not even a knuckle.
But like, Diego Pavia did not get that eighth of an inch when he was measured at the right. At the NFL draft combine.
I do think that's a pretty – if his arms were 26 inches or something like that, I might say, ooh, wow, that's something. But he's so close to the threshold.
Yes.
And why is it 31? Why isn't it 32? Why isn't it 31 and a half?
These are all good questions.
These are all the context and nuance, which is why I'm not an evaluator. So my worst case to me, like I am concerned about that stat. You can't ignore that. It's just like when you draft Kyler Murray or you draft
Bryce Young.
Yeah, you can't help but look at the history of quarterbacks that size and say, is he that super special guy? So to me, the mistake would be to draft the receiver at number 4 if you don't have him number 4, just because my quarterback has to have a receiver. Let's get the quarterback a receiver that he can grow with at 4. Now, you know me. I love the idea of trading down. If you can trade down and get Carnell Tate at the proper slot, then I'm on board with that.
That's why they call him Willie Trade Down Donnick.
I love the trade down. I love the trade down. Because I go back to what we've analyzed over the history of the draft, it is proven
yes.
that your odds of a successful draft increase a lot when you trade down and get more tosses at the dartboard. When you get more picks equal more chances for success.
And it helps them this year, just as any draft year, that no player in this draft is a sure thing. I don't think any player in any draft is a sure thing. There are higher chances of guys sticking to franchises that maybe need them, but no one is a surefire Hall of Famer as soon as their name is called at the NFL draft. I'll just say this. I'm a Jeremiah Love guy. I love the idea of pairing him with Cam Ward because I think that's a system fit, not only for the Titans, but for Cam Ward as well. I think, you know, I just don't want to see them make mistakes of the franchise's past. And I feel like that's kind of what the story of the Titans franchise is.
But you think Love is special?
I do.
In that slot?
I think he is.
Because to me, that's the central question.
Right. I think he is the most proven and the highest valued prospect in this draft. I don't think it would be a reach to take him at 4. I think that would be a great pick. I'm worried that they're going to go into the ways of Titans of old and get in their own way and overthink this and overthink like Caleb Farley or Isaiah Wilson. And those are the extreme examples.
Oh boy.
That general manager obviously isn't here anymore. But I'm worried they're going to overthink it and think, I'll use Adam's example. Reuben Bain, if we don't take him at 4, someone's going to take him and he's going to be a Hall of Fame level player. Which is a valid concern. That's what happens in the NFL draft. But I don't want them to get into their own heads and take a positional player that they don't necessarily need. Reuben Bain's probably a bad example in that. But Carnell Tate, for example, I think that would be getting in their own heads. Sonny Styles, I think, would be getting in their own heads. I'm worried that they're going to overthink things and draft a player of a position they need, but they don't necessarily need it as much as other positions.
615-737-1025. You can answer Connor's question. What would be the worst possible outcome for the Titans in the first round? 615.
But if you want to throw a little comedy into it.
Yes,
you can.
You can.
Worst case.
Yes. 615-737-1025. But because Connor...
You forget to make the pick. That would be worst case, right? Like the Vikings that one year,
you don't
they
get
famously
it in on time.
Missed the pick. Yeah.
Yes. 615-737-1025. Connor Newt is here, filling in for Derek Mason. So I thought, it's a Friday. Let's have a Friday DVD edition of Newt's Notes coming up next. 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Connor Newt, 1025 The Game.
It's Newt's Notes!
This is what happens when Chase won't make you image it. You just make your own.
D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt is in today.
Can I just say I'm really excited about this segment?
Yes.
Especially with that intro.
Newt's Notes is a staple of the weekend show on 102.5 The Game. But anytime Connor's in, I'm like, we got to do Newt's Notes. We got to do a segment of Newt's Notes. And we will get to Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, at the top of the hour. But it's time for Newt's Notes. So, Connor, take it away.
Well, Willie, you're going to be really excited about this one because it's about baseball today.
Oh, so, I love it. Let's go.
So yesterday, let me preface this by saying I'm a traditionalist when it comes to how the games are played and what uniforms are worn. So I want to talk about the City Connects that came out yesterday across the MLB. And I'm over it. I'm done with it. I think they've done everything that they can do and more. And it just doesn't hit for me anymore. I'm tired of seeing colors associated with teams that are not their traditional colors. Like, the Braves, I think, get a pass because historically they've used that powder blue color, if you know what I'm talking about. But then you look at some, and it's like the Reds are wearing red pants. And I'm like, what are we doing? This is too much. And then you look at the Padres, and they're wearing orange and navy. Those are not Padres colors. Especially now, since they've gone reverted back to the Padres colors of
old. And the Padres are particularly confusing because they did have orange and navy at one point. It was, and I didn't like that.
Even the current ones that exist today, like Willie, I'll use your Mets, for example. I understand the city ties that they're trying to convey.
But I'm not a fan.
The Mets are wearing pink and black, and it just doesn't look good. So I speak not just for MLB, but for sports across the professional landscape of North America. The NBA does this as well. The NHL did the reverse retro thing, but I think that actually worked because it was taking aspects of colorways and uniforms past and applying them to today. So I think that worked there. But the NFL is doing this now with their rivalry uniforms or whatever. The Titans are going to get one this year, so I'm interested to see how that looks. But I think this is just a corporate thing for Nike to make more money off of the common man. The common fan who is going to say, well, I need a jersey, might as well buy this hot new one since it's trendy. I'm kind of over it. I'm kind of over just seeing non-traditional colors on a traditional team. Like, what's a great... Like, the Padres last, before they got these new ones, the Padres were wearing pink and lime green. When have you ever seen the San Diego Padres wear pink and lime green?
The rainbow sherbet. I did not like that. I'm an endorser of this first note by Newt.
I'm an old
down on the City Connects. I don't like it.
Well,
in general, there's a few exceptions, but by and large, no, I don't like it.
Some of them look good, but like, who is it? Milwaukee yesterday. They're wearing like royal blue. Milwaukee doesn't wear royal blue. They're navy. And they have the powder blue elements that they have worn historically. Like, my dad and I were looking back at this. What teams historically have worn the powder blue throughout their history? And we came with the Cardinals, the Brewers, the Royals, the Phillies.
Blue Jays.
And there's one more that I'm missing.
There used to be a few more. In the 70s and 80s, it seemed like more were going away
from gray.
Montreal
Expos used
Montreal.
To. Yeah.
Texas Rangers for a long time had that.
Yes. But... now I feel like it's just overdone. They're trying to push these vibrant colors to speak to the new generation of fans, and I guess that would fit my age demographic, speaking historically, but I'm an old man at heart, and the old man in me says, down with the City Connects and just go back to tradition. Like, no one was more excited, except maybe you, Willie, last year, when they announced that the All-Star game, they're just going to wear their normal uniforms.
Thank goodness.
It looked so good. So I want the NBA to go back to that. And I realize they don't do a traditional All-Star game. But, you know.
The NBA, we got a long way to reel those guys.
We got a long way.
We were at Salt Lake yesterday, as you know, and we were eating lunch, Max Herz and I and Hal Gill, and we were looking at a series of Utah Jazz uniforms. They look like completely different franchises, completely different color schemes, but they wear them all.
At one point, they wore, like, orange. Right?
That was one of the jerseys in this restaurant.
They had like an orange tinted jersey.
It had
jersey.
A little Houston Astros 1970s
like
look to it.
The gradient. Yeah. Where it was like shades of the orange.
Rainbow. Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, the Utah Jazz should always wear the uniforms they wore during their heyday with Karl Malone and John Stockton, the purple uniforms with the mountain range on it.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better than that. I hear what you're saying, Connor. I like to think I'm a hip 37-year-old, but I actually did say this to Willie and Derek.
You're a cool guy.
Thank you. Several weeks ago, I was watching Duke play during the regular season, and they were playing a home game, and they got a shipment of shoes from Jason Tatum, who, of course, went to Duke, and they were yellow. So all of the Duke players were wearing their white uniforms with the blue trim and the blue lettering with bananas on their feet. And I'm like, this is awful. Like, I mean, that's the one traditionalist thing I have when it comes to jerseys is your gear needs to match the jersey. If you wear blue, your gear need if you're a basketball team that wears blue, your shoes need to be white, black, or blue.
Yep.
Or some combination. Don't wear pink shoes with a blue uniform. That's my old man yelling at Cloud.
I have a Word document right here.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to bust it out today, but I call it the Newt Sports Handbook of Fandom. And
okay.
It's about, you know, how traditionalist I am and with fanships and uniforms are in there. Of course, I think this comes with being a Kentucky guy, but it's always white at home, blue on the road if you're a Kentucky. And in Major League Baseball, to me, it is white at home or cream at home, or if you're the Mets, you wear the blue with the white pants at some points, and then you'll wear gray on the road or, you know, blue with the gray pants. I don't want to see the New York Mets in black and pink on the road. It's not a good look, and I don't understand how that fits into the colorway time frame of the New York Mets. And I'm just using the Mets as an example because Willie's sitting right next. But there are other teams across the league and across sports that do this as well, and I'm done with it. I couldn't bite my tongue anymore. I had to just let loose, and I feel a lot better now.
I'm glad you do. Okay. That was Newt's Notes on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. 615-737-1025. If you've got comments on Connor's thoughts, you can let us know. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Freeman will join us. We'll get into the Predators GM search, the playoff race, and more coming up next. 615-737-1025. Today, Vanderbilt baseball takes on Oklahoma at Hawkins Field. First pitch is at 6 o'clock. Pre-game starts at 5:45. Catch all of the action on 102.5 The Game. Coverage is presented by Gary Force Acura.